Sudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Chapter entitled Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, text number 14 onwards. Shri Yatra Rupin Yurugaya Padayo Shri Yatra Rupin Yurugaya Padayo Karoti Manam Bahuda Vibhutibhi Karoti manam bahuda vibhuti bi. Prankam shritaya kusuma karanugair. Prankam shritaya kusuma karanugair. Mana Priya Karma Gayati Vigiya Mana Priya Karma Gayati Shri the Goddess of Fortune Yatra in the Vaikuntha planets. Rupini in her transcendental form. Urugaya, the Lord who is sung of by the great devotees. Padayo, unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Karoti, does. Manam, respectful services. Bahuda, in diverse paraphernalia. Vibhutibhi, accompanied by her personal associates. Prankam, movement of enjoyment. Shrita, taken shelter of. Ya, who? Kasuma Kara, spring. Anugai, by the black bees. Vigiyamana, being followed by the song. Priya Karma, activities of the dear most. Gayati, singing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Goddess of Fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet. And being moved by the black bees, followers of spring, she is not only engaged in variegated pleasure, service to the Lord, along with her constant companions, but is also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. text 50. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community. The Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, Arhana, his immediate associates. Purport. When we speak of a king, it is naturally understood that the king is accompanied by his confidential associates like his secretary, private secretary, aide-de-camp, ministers and advisers. So also, when we see the Lord, we see him with his different energies, associates, confidential servitors, etc. So the Supreme Lord, who is the leader of all living entities, the Lord of all devotee sects, the Lord of all opulences, the Lord of sacrifices, and the enjoyer of everything in his entire creation, is not only the Supreme Person, but also is always surrounded by his immediate associates, all engaged in their loving transcendental service to him. Omagyan Tibadandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Ram Hare Hare. So, we're hearing here that Lord Brahma, as we explained last week, he performed divine austerity, and he didn't understand the purpose of his creation. He found himself on top of a lotus flower in the beginning of creation. At that point in time, he began to meditate. He heard the divine sounds, tapa. He went into performing tapo divyam, divine austerity. He began to meditate, and then finally he heard, or was initiated initially by divine Saraswati, the goddess of fortune. She came from the spiritual world. She initiated him, gave him Gopal Gayatri mantra, and then he became perfect by meditating on his mantra. Then upon becoming perfect by meditating on his mantra, he heard the sound of Krishna's flute in the spiritual world. This is all described in Brahma Samhita. Now, here in the Bhagavatam, it's a different description, because Lord Brahma is not seeing Krishna, he is seeing Narayan. And he is not seeing Goloka, as described in Brahma Samhita, but he is seeing Vaikuntha. So, in the Bhagavatam and the Brahma Samhita, it is a different Lord Brahma. Even in the Bhagavatam, when you go through the Bhagavatam, because Lord Brahma is spoken of in different places, it is not always the same Lord Brahma. So the Bhagavatam is an eternal scripture. The Vedas are eternal. They manifest in the material world periodically, from time to time. But the knowledge is eternal. And when you're dealing with eternity, you're dealing with time frames which are so vast, they're beyond our comprehension practically. So we're speaking about a lifetime of Brahma, which I think, from memory, is something like 311 trillion years or something like that on Earth. Something like that. Some amazing number. 100 years of his life. He doesn't feel like, oh, I'm living for 311 trillion years. He feels like I'm living for 100 years. But 100 years in his time is a vast amount of time on earth. So a lifetime of Lord Brahma is insignificant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because we hear from the Bhagavatam, from the Brahma Samhita, that Mahavishnu breathes. And every time Mahavishnu breathes, what takes place? A universe comes out of his pores. Right? And then when he inhales, the universe goes back into his pores. So this is God. This is who we're dealing with. God is unlimitedly powerful. This is the definition of God, unlimitedly powerful. And that's why Prabhupada was so critical of false gods. You know, if someone says, oh, this person is God, then you have to show unlimited power. You can't show something insignificant and then be claimed to be God. We're talking, God means God. God means unlimitedly powerful. So the universe will come out and the universe will go back in. Right? And that is just a breath of God, a breath of Mahavishnu, Karanadakshay Vishnu. In that time, Brahma is born, he lives, and then dies. So that's one Brahma. So here in the Bhagavatam, we're hearing about one Brahma. In the Brahma Samhita, we hear about another Brahma. Because in God's time frame, these things are insignificant. So many Brahmas come. Every time he breathes, there's a Brahma, and then one comes back, and then another one comes. And then every time he breathes, thousands and millions of universes come from his pores, and then they go back into his body, and then they come out again, like that. So it's insignificant to him. You know, we become proud if we're just a, you know, we're the head of the pot shed. Or we're the temple president. Or we're the GBC. Or we're the president of the United States of America. Or we're the Lord of the Earth. Or we're Lord Brahma. But everything is insignificant. To Krishna, everything is insignificant. Because he's God. He is unlimitedly powerful. And all of us, in whatever position, because this is just a position, it's not who we are. We are not Brahma. We may take birth as Brahma, but we are not Brahma. It's just a position that we hold for a period of time. And then when Brahma's life is finished, then it's gone. So it is insignificant. But we become attached to our position. But the position is just something we are given on Krishna's behalf. The demigods are just servants on his behalf. They just serve on his behalf. So, here in this particular part of the Bhagavatam, we hear that this Brahma, he sees Vaikuntha. Another Brahma in Brahma Samhita, it's a different Brahma, he sees Goloka. He sees Krishna. But here we see Narayan. We're hearing about Vaikuntha. Now, another point is that this is the only book in the world, not only book, but the only body of literature which teaches you or explains about the spiritual sky, what it's like in God's creation. You can't find these details anywhere else. God is a person. And he has a world, as Prabhupada describes in this purport. If you talk about a king has an associate. He has many associates. He has a palace. He has a domain. He has a country. He has things which are under his control. So everything in the spiritual world, because God is a person, everything else is also personal. And you see in these verses, it is described that he is surrounded by personified shaktis. Everything takes everything becomes personified in the spiritual world. Dharma or religion becomes personified. The Vedas become personified. Just like at the end of the 10th canto, you hear the prayers of the personified Vedas. And these personified Vedas, they desired to become gopis in Krishna's pastimes. They were called Shruti Chari gopis. Right? The Vedas, the personifications, the different Vedic literatures, personified as personalities, they had a desire, we want to enter into the Rasa Lila with Krishna. So everything in the spiritual world has personality. So you won't find this kind of level of description anywhere else in the world. There's no other body of literature which describes what it's like in God's abode. In this material world, we only hear what it's like in this world. But here we're hearing directly what it's like in the spiritual world. So in verse 14 it says, the goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet. This is called Padasevanam. Padasevanam is one of the nine types of bhakti. One of the nine limbs of bhakti. So what are the nine limbs? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Vandana. Did I miss one? Dasham Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. Like that. So these are the nine. So each limb is represented or has a person who became perfect by performing that particular limb. Shravanam, who became perfect? Parikshit, then Kirtanam, Shukadev, right? Then Smaranam, Prahlad, then Smaranam, what's next? Padasevanam, Lakshmi, right? Archanam, is Vandanam next, is it? Vandanam, Vandanam was? Yeah, prayers, Preetu Maharaj, Vandanam, Archanam. No, actually, Vandanam was Akrura, like that. Yeah, sorry. My brain's not up to speed. I'm not keeping pace. So each limb is perfected, or we show perfection in each limb by one particular person. Now, Pada Sevanam, we see that it is the perfection of that is shown by Lakshmi Devi. Because she is, in one sense, the personification of Dasya Ras. Dasya Ras means serving the lotus feet or being a humble servant. Just like recently, one of the woofers at our farm, some of our woofers are becoming devotees. So one of the devotees, she said, why are there pictures of people's feet around the place? You know, it's a very strange religion. You know, we hang pictures of people's feet on the wall. You don't find this anywhere else. You know, have you ever gone to someone's house and see someone's feet on the wall? Right? You come to our house and we have someone's feet on the wall. And they're like, why is that? Like that? So we explain that it is because when you submit to someone, you are at their feet. If you bow before someone or prostrate yourself before someone, offer obeisances, you're at their feet. Why do we do that? Because when you're at someone's feet and you're completely prostrated, you're helpless. You're at their mercy. They can do anything to you at that point in time. You're giving yourself to them. You're surrendering yourself to them. Right? And you're showing that I am bowing to the lowest part of your body to show that I am lower than you. I am your servant. I want to serve you. So that is the mood of Dasya. So Lakshmi, she is always massaging the lotus feet of Narayan, of Vishnu. She is personifying or perfecting Padasevanam. Now, Prabhupada explains, if you go to the seventh canto where this verse is there, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, Prahlad Maharaj speaks that verse to his father, Hiranyakashipu. What did you learn at school? What did you learn at school today? Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Who is teaching you this? Bring the teachers here now. What were their names? Sunanda and Amaka. Was it Sunda and Amaka? Yeah. So bring the teachers. What are you teaching? We didn't teach that. Where did you learn this, Prahlad? Right? He learned this in the womb from Narada. So when Prabhupada gives the purport, he explains, based on the commentaries of the Acharyas, the Padasevanam also includes service to the Holy Dham. Because the Holy Dham is where Krishna is placing his lotus feet or is walking all through the Holy Dham. Just like if you go to the three major dhams in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, because we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are followers of Krishna, we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we have three principal dhams, Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, and Vrindavan. And it says that when you go to Mayapur, the process of becoming perfect is Nam Sankirtan. How do you extract the mercy of the holy dhamma of Mayapur? By performing Nam Sankirtan. When you go to Jagannath Puri, what is the way that we become perfect? How do we extract the mercy? Right? It's by taking Jagannath Prasad, Mahaprasad. Jagannath Prasad is considered to be extremely powerful. And There is, what's that devotee's name? Madhavananda Prabhu. He brings out his magazines periodically. What are they called? Krishna Kathamrita. So in his magazines, he's done two magazines in the last couple of years. One on Jagannath, his Mahaprasad. One's about Mahaprasad, but especially Jagannath's Mahaprasad. And the other one, I think he's done three actually. He's done two about the temple itself. And there's incredible amount of information and etiquette surrounding that prasad, how to honour that prasad. So when you go to Jagannath Puri, the way to become perfect is by taking Mahaprasad. And when you go to Vrindavan, the way that we become perfect is by Braj Raj. Braj Raj means the dust of Vrindavan. Now why is the dust in Vrindavan extremely important? Because every particle of that dust in Vrindavan has been touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, by Balaram, by Radharani, by Yashoda, by Nanda Maharaj, by all of the associates in the spiritual world. So therefore, just by touching that dust, you are becoming purified because it has touched the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, Prabhupada explains that Pada Sevanam also means to worship the Holy Dham. So when we take devotees to the Holy Dham, we explain to them that Rupa Goswami has taught in the Mathura Dham Mahatmya that the way to enter into the Holy Dham or the spiritual world is through prayer. Rupa Goswami says you have to pray. So whenever we go to the Dham, we teach the devotees, bow down as much as you can. Pray as much as you can. Get into the dust as much as you can and you will become purified. It explains when Akrura first arrived in Vrindavan, he got off his chariot because he saw on the ground Krishna, the footprints of Krishna's lotus feet. And Krishna's lotus feet are so auspicious that wherever he walks, if the devotees in Vrindavan are walking, they see the footprints of Krishna's lotus feet. They won't step on those footprints because they worship them, they're sacred. So when Akrura saw them, he got off the chariot and he began to roll in the dust of Krishna's lotus footprints. Right? And that purifies you, just touching that dust. So therefore, Pada Sevanam, which is personified by Lakshmi Devi, she's always worshipping, massaging the lotus feet of the Lord. She understands the benefit of bowing down to the Lord or serving him or getting the dust from his feet. In other words, fully submitting oneself. That is Pada Sevanam. So that is the mood when we go to the Holy Dham. How do you enter into the Holy Dham? Right. You have to have a mood of full submission. I am servant. Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishnera Nitya Das. That is how we enter the Holy Dham. Otherwise, you can't enter the Holy Dham. If you enter the Holy Dham in the mood of Ahankara, or I am this, I am that, right? Ishwaraham Maham Bogi Siddharam Balavansa. If you have that mood, then you cannot enter the spiritual domain. So here we're seeing that the goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet. And being moved by the black bees, followers of spring, she is not only engaged in variegated pleasure, service to the Lord along with her constant companions, but is also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. So this is like a darshan into the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada says that when we look at the pictures of Krishna, where they're windows into the spiritual world, we're seeing what it's like in the spiritual world. So those pictures are based upon the descriptions given here in the Bhagavatam. Now it describes here that the season which is there is spring. How many seasons are there in the spiritual world? How many seasons? Yeah, six. Six seasons, right? Winter, spring, summer, autumn, right? Then there is monsoon, right? When the rains come. In India, we still have these six seasons. And there are two summers. There's the summer before the monsoon, which is extremely hot. And then there's the cooler summer, which follows the monsoon. So there are these six seasons. So in the spiritual world, for example, in Radhakund, which is the topmost place in the spiritual world, it describes that the six seasons are in the six directions. surrounding Radha Kund and Shyama Kund. So Radha and Krishna and their associates can choose at any time to enter into any of the six seasonal forests. All six seasons are simultaneously present in the spiritual world. And they will serve Radha and Krishna. In the material world, we have to put up with whatever we get. Right? You can't make summer come and you can't make winter come. It comes when it's time for winter and it comes when it's time for summer. And in Melbourne, it comes every day like that.
Sometimes it doesn't come.
And sometimes it doesn't come. Yeah? You don't know what you're going to get. But in the spiritual world, it is because the spiritual world is para prakriti, means superior creation. In the spiritual world, all the seasons are always there, and you can enter any of the seasonal forests whenever you want in the service of Krishna. And that's what Krishna does. If he desires to experience winter, he can go into the winter abode. And it describes that around Radha Kund and Shyama Kund, there are, like sitting platforms. You know when you go to India and sometimes there's a tree? And then around the base of the tree they have like a platform, like in Mayapur you'll see. So it describes that these platforms around Radha Kund and Shyama Kund, they are bedecked with jewels, the most beautiful mosaic jewels and platform, and they're of different heights. And if Radha and Krishna sit on one of the platforms, during summertime, the platform is cool. But if they sit on one of the platforms in wintertime, the platform is warm. So that is the spiritual nature, that is the superior nature of the spiritual world. Here in this material world, marble is cold all the time. Right? Or if you want to heat it, then you have to get some, you know, electricity, some hydraulic system, and you have to create some heat. But in the spiritual world, everything just happens automatically, without pollution. Everything is superior there. Whereas in this material world, to replicate or to duplicate anything in the spiritual world, it takes so much effort and we just make a mess of things. In the spiritual world, everything is superior, is for Krishna's pleasure. And it describes here that also she is always surrounded by her associates, and her associates are always singing the glories of the Lord's activities. So in the Brahma Samhita, it describes exactly the same, that in the spiritual world, every song is a dance, and every step is a dance, and every word is a song. So that's the nature of the spiritual world. Everyone is singing and dancing all of the time. Why do we sing and dance? Or when do we sing and dance? Yeah, when we're happy. If you feel happy, you begin to sing and dance. Like that. You see, Prabhupada says there are only two happy people in this material world. One is crazy, right? And the other one is liberated. Everyone else is miserable in the material world. But if you're liberated, you are satisfied. So you will sing and dance. It describes the six Goswamis of Vrindavan were always singing and dancing around Vrindavan. And a crazy person will also sing and dance. So in the spiritual world, everyone is always singing and always dancing because everyone is feeling unlimited bliss in their hearts. So it is described here that wherever the goddess of fortune goes, she is surrounded by unlimited associates. And we were explaining this last night also in our Bhakti Vedanta class because we're also discussing about Lakshmi. She just appeared from the ocean of milk in the eighth canto. When they churn the ocean of milk, then Lakshmi personifies, she manifests. So the Maha Lakshmi, or the original Lakshmi, the source of all Lakshmis, is Srimati Radharani. The original form of God, Swayam Bhagavan, is Krishna, and Narayan is his expansion. This is how the Bhagavatam explains. So wherever Krishna expands into a particular form, then Radha will expand into Lakshmi to accompany Krishna. So when he becomes Narayan, she becomes Lakshmi. So the original form of the goddess of fortune, the Maha Lakshmi, that is Srimati Radharani. Now Srimati Radharani, Jiva Goswami says, she is so qualified that Krishna does not need anyone else to serve him. If Krishna only has Radha, if that's his only associate and the only association he gets, she can fully satisfy him. That's how powerful she is. That's how potent she is. That's why she's the personification of bhakti. But then we can question, so why do we exist? Why is there so many other people in creation? Because she wants to share Krishna with everyone else. Just like if you have a really good sweet, right? Depending on what kind of person you are, right? Right? If you're a very selfless person, if you have a really good sweet, you want to share it with others, right? You get your friends and you say, hey, have some of this, right? Some very delicious experience I can give to you. So that is the nature of Radha, because she is completely selfless, which is the opposite of this material world. In the material world, everyone is selfish. There's a very nice verse that we read last night in the 8th canto, that when all of the nectar came from the ocean, because that's what they were churning for, the demons and the demigods, they got together. Normally devotees and demons don't work together, but the demons, they were working with the devotees because they thought, well, there's something to get out of this. So they were working, and then when the nectar came, what did the demons do? They all began to argue amongst themselves. Who's going to get the nectar first? Right? And Prabhupada points out, this is the material world. When you get something in the material world, I want it first. It's for me. It's not for you. Right? And then we begin diplomacy and politics to try to manipulate things so that we can enjoy. Whereas in the spiritual world, Prabhupada points out, the devotees are exactly the opposite. One time, an artist, a devotee, drew a picture of Srimati Radharani being pushed towards Krishna by the gopis. And Prabhupada said, this is the spiritual world. Right? In the spiritual world, you want to push everyone forward towards Krishna. Right? That is the mood of spiritual consciousness. But in the material world, whenever we get something, I want it first. In the spiritual world, we will give it to everyone else first. Just like if you go to Radha Govinda Mandir in Jayapur, where the original deities, which were found by Rupa Goswami in Vrindavan, they were installed by Krishna's great-grandson, whose name was Vajranaba. He installed the deities, and they were lost for a long time. They were underground. And Rupa Goswami was looking for these deities for a long time. So then he was despondent because he'd been looking for these deities, but he could not find them. And then one time he was sitting in Vrindavan, which is where the Radha Govinda Mandir is in Vrindavan. There's like a hill, small hill. And he saw that every day a cow was coming, and the cow was letting her milk out on this particular part of the ground. And then the cow would go, and the next day came back, and the milk would come out exactly in that same place. So then he had a dream, and the deity said, I am in that place. I am underground. I've been buried. The devotees buried me there to protect me from the Muslims who were invading and smashing the deities. So Rupa Goswami got the Brijbasis, and they all came, and they dug, and then they brought Radha Govinda out of the ground. And then he built a very beautiful temple for Radha Govinda, which was 7 stories high. And on top of the temple, there was a beautiful lamp, a ghee lamp. But in Agra, which is not far away from it was in Mathura. In Mathura, which is not far away from Vrindavan, the Muslim ruler, he could see at night time the lamp. And he said, where is that lamp coming from? And they said, that is coming from the Hindu temple. He said, go and smash the temple down. It's too big, too prominent. So it was this beautiful 7-story temple which had been built for Radha Govinda, but they smashed 5 stories off. Now there's only like 2 remaining stories there. So they had to protect Radha Govinda, so they took Radha Govinda to Jayapur, along with many of the Goswami's deities. The only original deity of the Goswami's left in Vrindavan is Radha Raman, Gopal Bhatta Goswami's self-manifesting deity. He's still there because they protected him. The devotees every night, they would take him into a lake in Vrindavan with bow and arrow, and they would stay all night in the middle of the lake so the Muslims could not come and get the deity. And they protected the deity, and he stayed within Vrindavan. But all the other deities left. So if you go to Jaipur and you go to the Radha Govinda temple, then they give out Mahaprasad from the altar. And what everyone does is when you just get a little piece of Mahaprasad, just like a little kind of morsel. But when you get the Mahaprasad, all the devotees, they walk around the back of the altar because there's a parakram mark around the back of the altar. So devotees walk around, they start breaking it and giving it out to everyone else. Have the prasad of the deity, have the prasad of the deity. And then at the end, when there's one little bit left, they take it. So that is the mood in the spiritual world. When you get some prasad, what do you do? You give it to your friends. What do we do in the material world? All right, we go and hide in our room and we eat the stash. All right, and if there's anything left, then we'll pass it out to everyone. Right? But in the spiritual world, everything is completely selfless. Ahoituki apratihata. And that's how we get back into the spiritual world. You can only get back into the spiritual world when you become a selfless servant of Krishna. But as long as we're selfish, then Krishna says you have to stay in the material world. Right? You can still be a devotee, but you have to stay in the material world because you're selfish. So then, in the next verse, it describes that there are unlimited associates. And every one of those associates is personified. Mm-hmm. And the head of all of the associates is Lakshmi. And it is said that the Lord is the head of the, Prabhupada translated as, the entire devotee community. Eko Bahunam. Eko Bahana means there's one amongst the many who is the centerpiece. And Prabhupada explains this in the Ishopanishad, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and all of us are meant to serve him. And Prabhupada explains, just like a concentric circle, if we all throw the stones into the center of the circle, then all of the waves of the circle, they come out very harmoniously. But when we don't keep Krishna in the center and each one of us puts something else in the center, then there is clash. And that's why the material world is chaotic, because everything is clashing, because all of us have different agendas. But in the spiritual world, everything is based upon Krishna and then there is harmony. Right? And even in the spiritual world, devotees have different opinions. Right? In the spiritual world, people have different moods. There are left-wing devotees, there are right-wing devotees. They don't all exact, but everyone cooperates. There is no enmity there. There is competition to give Krishna pleasure, but there is not a mood of bringing the other person down. And actually it describes in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, even though there's right-wing gopis headed by Chandravali, even though there are left-wing gopis headed by Radha, but sometimes when Krishna disappears, they all come together to console each other. They don't say, you don't have Krishna. You know, we have Krishna, but you don't have Krishna. No, when Krishna is gone from everyone and someone is crying and someone is feeling separation from Krishna, they all come together and console each other. So that is the nature of the spiritual world. It is free from envy. Even though people have different moods and they serve Krishna differently. So Prabhupada explains in the Ishopanishad that Krishna does not want to control us, even though he is the supreme entity. But he just wants us to cooperate with him. He just wants everyone to be cooperative. And Prabhupada said when he left the world, he said, the proof of how much you love me is how much you will cooperate once I am gone. Because all of us are different. Just like in the spiritual world. It's not like in the spiritual world everyone's the same. Everyone's different in the spiritual world also. But they cooperate. And the same in the material world. We're all different, but we have to cooperate. And that is how ISKCON goes on. Prabhupada said, if we stay together, then we cannot be broken. We cannot be defeated. And Prabhupada said, nothing can stop the movement from the outside. The movement can only stop from the inside. When devotees do not cooperate together, then that will stop things. But externally, it cannot be stopped. It can be difficult, but it won't be stopped. Even Prabhupada went through difficulties. It's not easy. Rupa Goswami went through difficulties. Everyone went through difficulties. If you look at the history since Lord Chaitanya left, every acharya went through so much difficulty to maintain the movement. Prabhupada went through so much difficulty. And what was Prabhupada's greatest challenge? What did he say was the greatest fight? Right? The battle to get Juhu. Prabhupada was in Australia, and then he left and he went to New Zealand. And he was in New Zealand, and then he got news that Mr. Nair had passed away, died of a heart attack. Right? And then Prabhupada, he leant back on his where he was sitting, and he said, "I've been praying to Lord Nisringadev to kill this demon." So it was a great fight. And then when the whole thing was over and Prabhupada finally got the land, because Mr. Nair's wife, she understood that she had offended a great sadhu, and that's why her husband had been taken by Krishna, she gave the land to Prabhupada. Said, "Prabhupada, take the land. We should not have offended you." And at the end of the whole thing, when Prabhupada had the land, Prabhupada said, "That was the best fight." So in the material world, it's not easy. We're going to have to struggle. But there must be a mood of cooperation. And if we all cooperate, then the movement cannot be stopped. We'll face challenges, but it cannot be stopped. But if we don't stay together, then everything will become difficult. So in the spiritual world, we see, as it says here, that everyone is serving Lakshmi. She has so many associates, and they just cooperate. How can I assist? That is the mood of the spiritual world. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Today, the appearance of another pandit, you want
to tell us something? Gadadhar is one of the members of the Panchatattva. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. Nityananda Prabhu is Balaram. Advaita Acharya is the combined form of Sadashiva and Mahavishnu. Gadadhar is the incarnation of Shakti Tattva. Gadadhar is the incarnation of Srimati Radharani. And Srivast Thakur is the incarnation of Narada Muni, the perfect devotee. So Radha always wants to be with Krishna, but she can't always be with him because she is female, he is male. The only way they can be together, they have to meet privately in a very... what's that?
Secluded.
Yeah, secluded. They have to meet in secluded places and they have to meet very... It has to be undercover. I'm trying to think of another word. What is it? Yeah, it's concealed. The whole thing, the whole pastime is very... Yeah, it's incognito. It's the whole thing is very hidden. So Radha wants to be with Krishna all the time, but she can't. She's with him, but then in the afternoon, she's been with him for about 5 hours in the afternoon, from 10:30 to 3:30 every day. They spend time together. But then suddenly, the parrots fly in to the grove, Brinda Devi's parrots, they fly in, and they say, "Jatila is coming, Jatila is coming." Which is Radharani's mother-in-law. So everyone just jumps. Right? And then Radha runs to Suryakund, which is not far from Radhakund. And they go there, and then Krishna and Madhu Mangala come, dressed as brahmanas. There's a whole pastime. It goes on every day like that. It's like a whole pastime. That's Suryakund every day. So she wants to be with him all the time, but she can't because the superiors are always watching her. So then sometimes she thinks, in my next life, when he gets born again, I want to be a boy. Then I can be with him all the time. So then Krishna, he felt that his pastimes were not complete. So then he took the form of Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya. So same Krishna took the mood, the duty and the bhav, the mood of Radha, the complexion of Radha, and then he became Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahiyanya. It is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So then, when he appeared, Krishna appeared as Gauranga, then Radha appeared as Gadadha. And as a boy, she could always be with him. So now she is always with him. But she does not manifest her like the full moon, or had it's just trying to. She cannot manifest like the full mood of Radha in that form, because Krishna is experiencing Radha's mood. So therefore, Krishna experiences the full mood of Radha, all the ecstasies. Because today is, what is the lunar day today?
Amavasya.
Amavasya means it is dark. The moon is covered. Right? It's the dark moon today. So today, Gadadha appeared. Because although it is Radha, but it's covered. So she won't show like the full ecstasies or the full emotions of Radha. Because that is for Lord Chaitanya to experience this time. Krishna to experience. So she kind of pulls back and she holds back her... She doesn't... All the separation from Krishna. But she becomes the assistant of Krishna. So when Lord Chaitanya was in Mayapur, in Navadvip, they grew up together and they were inseparable. And there's a pastime described that one time Lord Chaitanya, he is in feeling separation from Krishna. Lord Chaitanya says, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" And Gadadhar says, "Krishna is in your heart." So Lord Chaitanya grabs his chest and starts to dig at his chest. And then Gadadhar just grabs Lord Chaitanya's hands and says, "Just be peaceful, be peaceful." So they were always together, and Mother Sachi always wanted Gadadhar to be with Mahaprabhu to keep him pacified, because he was becoming very emotional in his ecstasies. So then he took sannyas and he went to Puri. So then Gadadhar also took sannyas and went to Puri and took Chetra sannyas. And they lived there together. And Lord Chaitanya was living in Gambira. And Gadadhar was living like over the back of Puri in a very secluded place, which is now called the Tota Gopinath Temple. So one time, if you go to the Tota Gopinath Temple, opposite the temple there was a sand dune which is called Chakat Parvat. And that sand dune, Lord Chaitanya saw that, if you read in the Anshalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he saw that sand dune as Govardhan Hill. And Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur chanted many, when he took that brat to chant 1 billion names of Krishna, many of those names were chanted at that place. It's a very powerful place. It's no different from Govardhan Hill. So one time, Lord Chaitanya and Gadadhar were sitting on top of Chakat Parvat of the sand dune, and Lord Chaitanya put his hands into the dune and then he pulled out a huge deity of Krishna. And it's actually described that this deity of Gopinath, Tota Gopinath, which is there in Puri, is the first deity in this universe. If you read in the Bhagavatam, this chapter we're reading now, when Lord Brahma, or actually it's in the Brahma Samhita, when Lord Brahma sees Krishna in his meditation at the beginning of the universe, that is the deity. It is Tota Gopinath. This is the original deity in this universe of Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya pulled the deity out of the sand dunes and he gave it to Gadadhar. And he said, "I want you to worship this deity, because that is Radha worshipping Krishna." And then he pulled out Radha and he pulled out Lalita. And Lalita and Radha are black. Normally Radharani is made from white marble. All the gopis are made from white marble. But they're both in the mood of separation from Krishna, so they're also black marble. So then he worshipped Tota Gopinath for many, many years in Puri. And then Lord Chaitanya left this world. And then he kept worshipping the deity, but Gadadhar became old very quickly, feeling very, his energy was depleted because of Lord Chaitanya's separation. So he used to go in every day to worship the deity, and he'd make garlands, and then the deity's very tall. The deity's like over six, it's like a 6 foot tall deity, it's a big deity. So he put the garlands around the deity's neck, but he was becoming old and didn't have the energy. And then one day when he walked in, the deity was sitting down. And there's the only deity of Krishna, really, that you'll see who is sitting. Normally you'll see Krishna standing in the Tribhanga Lalita. He's in the threefold bending form. But in Puri, then Tota Gopinath is sitting, like in Padmasana, sitting cross-legged. So then it was easy for him to put the garlands around his neck. So he was there for many years. And Lord Chaitanya used to go every day from Gambira to Tota Gopinath, and he would learn Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar. Because who is the best person to teach you the Srimad Bhagavatam? Srimati Radharani, because she's the greatest devotee. She gives the best classes. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, would go every day to hear Bhagavatam from Gadadhar. And it's described that Gadadhar would read the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. And it's said that Lord Chaitanya asked to hear these pastimes hundreds of times. And it says that when Gadadhar was speaking, tears were coming from the eyes, and the whole Bhagavatam became, because it was all written in ink back then. It was written in ink. All the writing became blurred because of all the tears. Lord Chaitanya was just crying, hearing, and Gadadhar was crying, speaking. That's how we should give Bhagavatam class. Because we have no emotion and there's no tears, which are coming. And when we hear Bhagavatam class, we don't feel great emotional ecstasy. But the great associates, when they hear, then tears come to the eyes. That's all. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yeah, because in Brahma Samhita, he sees Krishna and he sees Goloka. So that's a different Lord Brahma to what's currently. Even in the Bhagavatam itself, because Brahma is there several times in the Bhagavatam, it's not always the same Lord Brahma. So what he's seeing here is a different Lord Brahma, seen by Kunta. And in Brahma Samhita, it's Brahma sees Goloka. He's seeing Vaikuntha like that. Whereas in the other description, he sees Goloka. And this chapter is incredibly important because in about another 15 verses, we get to the Chaturshloki. In 2nd Canto, 9th chapter, verses 33 to 36, they're the four seminal verses of the entire Bhagavatam. So when Brahma, when Krishna played his flute, Brahma heard these four verses. And from these four verses, that's what he heard, and the entire Bhagavatam is in those four verses, then he elaborated upon that. So in another couple of weeks, we're going to hear the Chaturshloki, very long purports. I think they're the longest purports practically in the whole Bhagavatam. Maybe the very first purport of the Bhagavatam, 111, that's about 14 paragraphs. But some of these purports are incredibly long as well. Is there any other question? Same thing. Because we have to chant prayerfully. When we're chanting, right? Sometimes we're chanting, we're not even there when we're chanting. Our minds are thinking of something which has got nothing to do with the chanting. So you're saying, Hare Krishna, but your mind's thinking of, I have to buy this for my shopping tonight. And sometimes you're doing your shopping list while you're chanting. So you're not chanting at that point in time. Mechanically it's going on, but there's no consciousness. The heart's not there. So when we're chanting, we should chant prayerfully. And what did Prabhupada say? When Prabhupada gave several definitions of the Maha Mantra, and our acharyas, the previous gurus, have given many definitions of the Maha Mantra. But the most simplistic definition Prabhupada gave of the Maha Mantra is, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. So when we're chanting, that should be our prayer. That's what we should be meditating on. Oh, Krishna, please engage me in your service. We chant 16 rounds every day, right? Oh, Hare Krishna, please give me service, please give me service, please give me. And then someone comes up to you and says, can you do some service? You say, no, I can't do any service. So, huh? Yeah, so what then? Why are you chanting for? you just chant for 2 hours, please give me service, please give me service. And then someone comes and says, can you please do some service? You say, I can't do any service, I'm busy. So, unless you are busy doing service, that's fine. But the point is, we're praying for service to Krishna. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please. That's a prayer, please. I don't have any qualification. Right? Please. Right? What is the fifth verse of the Shikshastika? Ayi nanna tanuja kin karam. Ayi means, you know, in India they say, Ayi, Krishna, nana, nanda, tanuja, son of Nanda. Ayi, Krishna, please. Kinkara. Kinkara means, I'm your servant. Like that. There has to be desperation. Why don't we see Krishna? There's no desperation. When we want to see Krishna, Krishna will show himself to us immediately. But there's no desperation, so Krishna says, okay, you're not serious, I'm not serious. And then if you're 50% serious, Krishna gets 50% serious. Yayata mam prapajante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. So it's up to us. Right? When we become serious, then Krishna's already serious. But he's only going to look when he sees. Prabhupada explains in Nectar of Devotion that when we chant, it should be like the child calling for the mother. Right? Just like last night I was giving class and one of the children hurt themselves outside and immediately the mother, there were so many ladies in the class, but the mother got up immediately because she could hear her child and she walked out. Right? Because the child was calling for the mother. So Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion that we should call for Krishna like the child calls for the mother. So when we say, Krishna, I need you, then Krishna will come. But at the moment, we're not that serious. So Krishna's like, okay, you know, when you're ready. Okay. Any other question? Comment? Srila Prabhupada ki. Sure.